I'm John Kroll. This show marks the one-year anniversary for No Limits. In honor of the occasion, we will revisit the subject of that very first show, Jobs in the Economy. We have back some of our guests from the first program, Marion Mayor Wayne Siebold and Lynn Albin of Mount Pleasant Christian Church, which runs a program for unemployed members of the congregation. We also have with us Lynn's colleague, Tim Rissmiller, and Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner Mark Everson, and you. You can join this conversation about whether the economy and the jobs picture have gotten better or worse in the past year by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts and take your questions. Now, the news. Welcome to this special anniversary show of No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're going to be talking about the same thing we talked about on our very first show a year ago, and that is Indiana's economy and jobs one year later. We're fortunate to have actually three people who have, this will be at least their second appearance on the show, and one newcomer. Our return guests, the first two, are from that very first show. Marion Mayor Wayne Siebold. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. And Lynn Albin of Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood, which runs a program for unemployed members of the congregation. Lynn, welcome back.
Thank you.
Does it seem like it's been a year?
Yes and no.
Okay. With Lynn is our new guest, Tim Rissmiller, from also Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood. Tim, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. And a repeat guest, but on a different topic, Mark Everson, who is the Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Well, we're going to talk a little bit, and I guess what I'd start with Mayor Siebold and Lynn first. And just ask, since you were here a year ago, have things gotten better or gotten worse in the past year? I'll start with you, Mayor Siebold.
Well, I'd say over the last year, I'd say in Marion, they haven't gotten worse, and I don't know that they've gotten much better, but we're really kind of holding our own. We've got a number of companies that are presently hiring people, and we've had some growth errors in a number of sectors, from higher education to retail, medical, and all those types of things. So it's definitely not worse, but I don't know how much better it is. I think we're doing a pretty good job of holding our own.
What are your unemployment numbers right now?
Last month we were right around 11%, which was down a little bit from last year.
When we were here, yeah.
Yeah. And so in that regard, we're a little better. Those numbers seem to fluctuate when there's plant shutdowns for a month or two, like GM did, or not a couple weeks like they did, and so that number seems to fluctuate. But I think in these times it's hard, and I keep bringing this up, when you get people who have been on unemployment for a long time, mm-hmm. it's hard to get them back into the workforce, and as those things. People go to work and then they leave and then they go somewhere else and they leave. And last night we got a call from a company who had someone go to show up for work, and they said, all right, let us get your paperwork. It would take us about 2 minutes to get back to you. And they came back and the person was in the car leaving. And so, we're seeing when people have been on unemployment for a long time, it's you got to get a hold of them and get them back into the mode of working. And sometimes that's a difficult thing.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, how about you? Are things better or worse with your program this year? Are you seeing that more people need the help that you provide, or fewer?
Well, last year when we started, it was about in July. So when we were on the program, we had just been getting going. But we do see an average attendance of about 15 people each week, even though it may change from one person to another, someone gets a job or discontinues coming. But there's always new people every week.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Tim, you are one of those folks, right?
Yes.
Okay, and could you tell us a little bit about your story, how you came to be part of the program at Mount Pleasant?
Well, I've been with attending Mount Pleasant for a number of years, and I became unemployed about a little over a year ago. And one of the folks at Mount Pleasant, Spence Tuttle, approached me and said, hey, we'd like to start a employment networking type group. And actually, I said, well, that sounds interesting. And we had a meeting with Bruce Flanagan, who's the author of the book, It's Not About You, It's About Them. And he has started other groups and other churches. And we thought that would be something good for Mount Pleasant. So we started day one, three or four of us there, with some advertising through the church bulletin, and that's how we got started. Me personally, I'm a property manager, facility manager, taking care of maintenance for lots and lots of properties, over 100 and some odd properties. But it's been a real challenge. You mentioned, have we had any more, if things have changed? I really don't think so. We have more people, sure, because of word of mouth has come to us in the past, but I think I go with what the mayor said, that we're just about steady as it has been. Some things are a lot better. Our group isn't a job board for employment jobs. Mm-hmm. We are there to come alongside people and prepare them for that next job interview. And we have a lot of partners and resources that the church has, different volunteers the church have brought to us. And that's really the way we help folks. So we don't see the or we don't promote the job opportunities that may be out there in the community, although we do have several different ways we do that, including LinkedIn, the church bulletin, or a church email that Lynn puts out, which is full of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Mark Everson, you probably have the most global perspective here because it's your job really to look at this from the entire state's perspective. Are we making progress, or do you agree with the mayor's assessment that right now we're pretty much just holding our own?
Well, let me give you a few sort of indicators. There is some progress that's taken place over the last couple of years. If you look at, we track the initial claims every week. You hear about that for the whole country. We look at it obviously for Indiana. And initial claims for unemployment are now down at levels not seen since 2007. So that's definitely good news. That means people coming into the unemployment system who need benefits. They're just a little bit ahead. If you go back to 2007, they were 15% up from the same week in that period for last week. So that's pretty close, and they're way down from where they were, in, as an example, in 2009. That having been said, the issue is, the mayor got right to it, it's the long-term unemployed and certain segments of the population. I'm going to be 57 in a few weeks.
Happy birthday.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
But if you're unemployed and you're over 55, it's very tough. And it's, interestingly enough, the youth have a much pull back into the workforce much more quickly. And just as the mayor said, there's an aversion to hiring people who've been out for a long time. It's very hard to overcome the perception that you have somehow, through your own attitudes, been unable to get a job. And so I think that's a real issue. As to job creation, we need to create more jobs. There's a tremendous overhang right now from the national situation. You just heard the news report from
the stock market's taking another plunge today.
Exactly, and there's real concern. So if you're tied to national marketing issues or consumer spending, you're going to be very reluctant to bring on new people. And the last thing I'll sort of say many people have made this comment, companies worked very hard to increase their productivity, and they have learned to operate with fewer people. Mm-hmm. And they don't need the individuals that they once did, even just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So that makes it a challenge, too. We do see hiring. You've got employment announcements that take place routinely across the state. The governor, everybody around him works very hard to try and encourage investment, just as the mayor does in Marion. And so there are good things that are happening, but you have to balance it off with this search for productivity and a general sort of concern about the overall economy.
Now, do you... IBJ just reported, obviously, you probably saw the story, that a lot of the workforce development dollars from the federal government are drying up these days. Are we doing the things we should to stimulate the economy and to create jobs in this state? Is it simply a state problem? I mean, is there something that can be done, you know, at the national level that we ought to be looking at that would help Indiana specifically? Mayor Siebel, you look like you're ready to say something.
I would tell you that, I mean, we're in negotiations now with, we have 32 projects we're working on, literally, of mm-hmm. companies that are looking to move to Marion and make an investment or add equipment and those types of things. And we do that because we're very aggressive in how we approach companies and the incentive programs. And I can tell you from a local standpoint, with the state and the way they are as well, it makes it a lot easier for us to attract these companies over, say, Illinois or Michigan or Ohio and California and those places. And so we have two companies, one that's already in Grant County. They're actually in Gas City, who left Indonesia and have brought their product to Grant County. And we have another company that's going to close in Indonesia, and they're going to bring that product to Marion. And they're telling us they can make that product for the same price point in Marion as they can in Indonesia. So there's a huge opportunity out there. It's just that with banking regulations and the tightening up of those and a lot of other things, it's very difficult for business to get going and to have the money they need to get supplies and put product together and buy the equipment they need. And that's the frustrating part. There are companies that want to get to work and hire people, and it's just hard getting through some of that federal loan regulation and the banking issue.
Mark Everson, does the fact that some of those federal workforce development dollars are drying up, and frankly, stimulus money is running out right now, I think a lot of it capped on June 30, so does that concern you at all? Or?
Well, I agree that we have to reduce federal spending overall, and the activities that we conduct are part of the most exposed piece of the budget. It's in the domestic discretionary spending, which is the first target of any reduction. So I'm not going to argue against spending reductions in this area. However, it is my job to make sure that we are reducing the activities on an orderly basis, and that we're prioritizing correctly what we are doing. What we do is we provide training activities, and in some cases we provide third-party funds with Ivy Tech or some other educational institution. So that is definitely going down. The biggest program that we have, it's something called the Workforce Investment Act, and that spending, as you indicated, it's gone down 18% year over year. Now, part of that is that the state has a better unemployment rate than much of the country. And that's good news. I mean, our unemployment rate is way down from where it was. It was at 10.9. Now it's down. It was 8.3 for June. And so that's one reason why we're getting less funding to do some of these activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd say that's why their program is really important, you know, at the church.
Yes.
I mean, that's why that's such a great program.
Yeah. We are talking about Indiana's economy and jobs with our guests, Marion Mayor Wayne Siebold, Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner Mark Everson, and Lynn Alban and Tim Rissmiller of Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's economy and the job situation here in the state. Fortunate to have as our guests Marion Mayor Wayne Siebold, Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner Mark Everson, Lynn Alban, and Tim Rissmiller of Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood. I'd like to invite you to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Tim, I want to talk with you because I think sometimes when we have these conversations about jobs and the jobs picture, it gets theoretical and we start throwing numbers around and percentages, and it drifts away from the human perspective. How long had you been employed before you lost your job? A little more than a year ago.
My goodness, probably 30 some odd years. I'm a little older than Mark is, but
okay. Well, yeah. All right. We won't coax a confession out of you.
Thank you very much. But, appreciate that, John.
But and did it come as a surprise to you, or was it something you saw coming? Or
well, it was kind of a surprise. But you know, one of the things I wanted to really get back to circle back here, the mayor, yeah, and what they were talking about is, you know, regardless of what the age is, if there's any gaps in employment, and you were talking about if you've been employed unemployed for a year or 6-8 months or 2 years or whatever, we like to challenge people in our Monday morning groups to volunteer, to not only to fill a gap in a resume, but to be productive and useful in the community. Work One, there's a lot of good opportunities, and we've partnered with their people before. But just to get out and volunteer, just to do anything, whatever it is that you like, whatever it would be. Now that you're kind of grown up and you'd like to do something else, well, that's what you ought to do if you want to be a mentor to some kids or whatever. On the other side of that, John, on the resume and on my resume, as an example, that's what you'll see. For the last year or so, I have been with Mount Pleasant as a volunteer and a leader of this group. I'm just one of the folks helping to do this, but we try to encourage people to do that. Our encouragement on Monday, we all see what the newspapers say and the radios and the TVs and everything else, but our thing is on Monday mornings, John, is to get the folks there. Mm-hmm. It's in a great setting. Dress for success, and for the next hour and a half, we're going to be kind of casual. But it's Monday morning, and we're going to get people out. It's positive, and let's go. If it's a volunteer organization or whatever, sometimes we have partners come in and help us. Let's go. Don't look past. Today's a new day. It's a Monday morning. We give them some tools and aids to help in their job searches through the week. And that's just kind of the way, what do they say, that's kind of the way we roll, to get people motivated and encouraged to go out there and look. Now, we've had some pretty pretty nice success stories, in fact, for folks, John, if I can, who have had resume writing help. And we have a partner, a wonderful fellow at church, who is volunteering his time to review resumes on a one-on-one basis and just help resume writing, things like that, of almost 50% of the people who have gone through that and have come to our group throughout the year have received jobs.
Are you volunteering, obviously.
Yes.
Are you searching for employment now,
yes,
too?
Yeah, yes.
What sort of obstacles are you running into there,
I think,
would you say? And that's what I want to... I'm sorry, I kind of want to take it away just from what the program is doing, not because I don't think the program is worthy. It
sure,
is.
Sure.
But I want to try to get this to the level of somebody who's actually looking for a job right now. What is that like?
Age is tough. Age is tough. They say if you have a few whiskers, it is tough out there. I don't think some employers understand that the job is for people coming in now, older people, more diversified age groups, is they're not looking for that $100,000 a year job, but they do have experience and they are able and willing to accept less. And I think companies are a little suspicious, maybe a little reluctant to hire folks like that. It's just a tough middle gray area, middle ground, for sure.
And that's one of the things. I mean, I know Mark and Mayor Siebold both have made the argument that when people have been unemployed, that getting them back into the habit of being at work is difficult. It also seems that, you know, if, and I may be phrasing this, that their companies to some degree have to be retrained here too. That, you know, the employers have to wrap their heads around the fact, and I can say probably as someone who does do some hiring in that situation, you look at someone who has been making $100,000 a year or whatever, and you've got a $30,000 a year job, you've got some concern that if you hire that person, as soon as a $100,000 a year job becomes available, you're going to lose that person and lose a lot of your investment. But that's not necessarily the case.
I don't think so, John. I think you're absolutely right there because, again, we try to talk about this in our conversations that the employment market is not what it was a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. It's just not that.
In what way? In what way are you saying?
The opportunities are just not available. And
it's gotten worse from your perspective.
Well, I think the numbers are coming forward, and yet I don't think it's gotten worse. It just hasn't gotten any better. And that's what the mayor was saying earlier. But I think the go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, Mark Everson, we are going to get some new state unemployment numbers out tomorrow.
Can you
give us a hint as what those might be or what you think
be? No, I cannot.
Can you make an educated guess?
I'm precluded under law from sharing those until tomorrow. And I'm not going to go there. Let me just reinforce what Tim just said, if I could. I've actually been unemployed. And it takes a tremendous beating on your spirits. So it is very important to do what Tim just said, to be active. It doesn't matter whether it's volunteer work, but you've got to get up each day and do something. And if you do, then if you get into a position to actually interview for a job, you're going to come across as much more positive and likely to be a good team member for that organization. And you're also going to have, as he indicated, an accounting of how you spent your time. So substantively and emotionally, and I also encourage people to exercise, by the way. Very important to get in a program of exercise because it relieves the stress.
Ryan, welcome to the program. How are you doing today? Ryan, are you with us?
Hello, can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Yes, Ryan.
Hi, sorry.
Not a problem.
How are you doing?
We're doing well. Your question, please.
Well, the recent CBO report that the infrastructure and billions of dollars more beneficial for the economy than the additional spending cuts. I work in the construction field. I'm an engineering consultant, and there's so many jobs.
Ryan, we're I think your cell is garbled a little bit. Could you give me your question in about 10 words, maybe?
We not see conditions, revenues, and taxes. As the president suggests in the Dutch debate, to provide both jobs, the federal government security, the ability to reduce the deficit with taxes.
Okay, could you try calling us back, see if we get a better signal?
I can.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it. Okay. And I think some of it, what he was saying is that, and this is at the heart of the debate we were referring to earlier, is that spending cuts aren't enough, you know, to stimulate the economy, that there has to be some reinvestment. And I guess that's where I would take the conversation next. Lynn, you're nodding your head. Where do you think we need to reinvest resources right now?
I think that it would be a really good idea to reinvest in training for people. A lot of people who have lost jobs recently are kind of on the fence as to whether or not they want to go back to that same job or if they want to try something new because they know what their field has kind of gone downhill, and so they're fearful of trying to return to it, and they don't know what to do. So I think investing in people is what we need to do because they need to be able to get back into the job field And part of it is that they know they're not going to be able to make the money that they used to when they worked previously. It just doesn't seem like, you know, with more productivity expected out of people and you're just making less for what you're doing, kind of. And so they're feeling badly about it, and so they really don't know where to go. And so I think jobs training and different types of schooling opportunities so that people can get into a different field would be really beneficial for a lot of people.
Tim, what would help you? I mean, you're the one who's in this situation right now. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but literally it is, you're a hardworking guy, had, you know, a lot of productive years. It's not helping anybody to not have you employed right now, starting with you. What do we do to help you at this stage? What should we be doing? What resources would help you?
Just jobs. However that is that it comes about. Government can't do everything for us. I think there's a mindset, an attitude. There's a lot of things going on out there that none of us have any control over. I think training is important. I think it's just like a beef stew of a whole bunch of different things. But the jobs creation or whatever, it just has to be there. There's a supply and demand, and there's a whole lot more supply than there is demand. A good friend of mine just came off a 90 days temporary employment for a job. He was given a permanent job at this particular company, and he was told the day he got the job that he would not get an increase in salary, but the team he worked on of four people was being cut down to two, and he was one of them. And I think some of the other guests have alluded to that before. There's a fellow with a job, salt of the earth type of guy, got his job, and his team gets cut in half for production. So how that comes about, I really don't know.
Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much.
Good to have you here. What's your question?
Well, I was just listening to the program, and I was listening to the idea of training, and I kind of agree that it's, to use your guest example, kind of a beef stew. Having received all that training, I can tell you from experience that finding a job even with that training right now is extremely difficult. And so, you know, and that's in Indiana, where we're probably number 47 in the oversupply of lawyers in the state of Indiana. And so the question is, you know, in a situation like that where you have people that are receiving professional training, especially considering how many people are going back to school rather than going into the working environment because the working environment's so bad, you know, how are we going to deal with that next step where all these people are going to come out of school with that relevant training and there's not going to be any jobs for them?
Good question. Thank you for calling. Well, I'll toss that one to Mark Everson, since it seems to be somewhat in your bailiwick. If we've gotten all of these people retrained and there are still no jobs for them,
it's a real issue. And what we can do is we will work with the individuals who come into the Work Ones, and we will help them assess their skills levels in different areas, and also their interests. And then we will counsel them as to where there are opportunities. Because there are opportunities, and I want to emphasize...
where are those opportunities?
They're across all sectors. And the great challenge here is that many employers are hiring, and they have difficulty finding the people they need.
That's right.
And it comes down to two things. It comes down to skills gaps, technical skills gaps, but also sort of what Wayne was getting at earlier, it's also what we call soft skills. There are real concerns about people's willingness to work, to show up on time, to be drug-free. We put in a policy July 1st that we will not give somebody third-party training dollars to go to Ivy Tech under our biggest program unless they take a drug test. There's a whole host of issues here that are very challenging. So if you want a job, I really do suggest come into the Work One offices and get those skills assessments. And we can't guarantee a job, obviously, but we can at least address the issue that the caller just got to by saying this training is more likely to result in something for you than something else is.
Ryan, thank you for calling back and working with us. Oh, not a problem.
Can you hear me? You're working with me at this point.
Yes. No, this is great. We've got a good cell phone signal. So let's take another shot at your question.
Well, I called when you guys were talking about spending cuts at the federal level. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if there was any kind of communal concern with that issue. I'm an engineering consultant in the construction industry, and everything that I do, I realize, especially in Indiana, that so many jobs rely on government spending, from Cummins defense contracts to non-essential workers at the FAA Indianapolis Airport. How are, when the recent CBO report came out that suggests additional spending on infrastructure in the billions of dollars would be more beneficial for the economy than additional spending cuts, this would actually put millions of people back to work, including Hoosiers. How would we justify additional cuts at this point, and are we worried that doing so is going to deepen the recession?
Good question.
Why would we not seek additional revenues and taxes when it was debated in the debt ceiling to provide both jobs with federal spending and secure an ability to reduce the federal deficit with those taxes?
Good question. We will take it up, and thank you again for calling back. Appreciate it. Okay, his question really is, there are areas where they recommend reinvestment, specifically to create jobs. But to some degree, it's revisiting, like, public works projects ideas. Mayor Siebold, is that a good idea?
Well,
and I realize I'm walking us right into the middle of the great partisan debate right now.
Well, but at the end of the day, if you take the partisan side out of it, it's the chicken and the egg. If you start taxing people more, how do they pay those taxes when they don't have work? And is it the government's role to create those jobs? The government, the city of Marion, we need to pave roads and we need to do those things. Quite frankly, we don't have the money to do those things. Mm-hmm. So I've in the last 2 weeks, I can tell you, I've probably had 8 engineering firms in our office trying to find work, and we don't have the money to do the work, because the revenues just aren't there. And so you're in this catch 22. The way we get revenue in government is getting people to work. But if people, and that's where it is. I think going back to the question that we are talking about is in getting to work, sometimes I think it's we got to retrain the people to think a little differently. And I had a pastor came to me and said, my people in my church, a lot of them can't find work. And I said, well, there are jobs available. It might not be the job they want, but there are jobs available. So he says, I'm going to have a job fair, and I'll come back and report to you. And he said, how many jobs do you think are available in Marion? I said, I don't know. My guess is somewhere around 300 based on some of the information we have. And he came back about 6 weeks later. He said, listen, we had a job fair. You were wrong on your number. He said, we went out and did the whole county, not just the city, but there were 954 jobs available. And he said, now, not everybody wanted that particular job, and it was paid a little bit less than they wanted, and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. But he said, I agree with you. There are jobs available, and maybe not for everybody. I think there is that age discrepancy. I think there's a lot of that goes on. But today, I think we have to train ourselves. At some point, I'm going to be out of a job. That could be in November, or it might be 4 years from now. Who knows? But you got to train yourself to be so marketable that someone almost has to hire you, in a sense. And so that you have a lot of different skill sets and a lot of things that you can offer different groups, and you got to be willing to take maybe a job for a while that you don't want until you find the one that you want.
And it sounds like what you're saying here, Mayor Siebold, is that we're entering into a period where people just have to accept that employment volatility is going to be part of their lives, that they need to worry about whether they're going to have a job much constantly. Tim, you were about to, real quickly, if you could.
Absolutely. You have to remarket yourself. You have to get into LinkedIn and other programs like this to market yourself, and that is a key word, Mayor, is how do you market yourself? This idea of the training is outstanding. The last job I applied for, I was one of 6 candidates called after 2 interviews. I asked the HR director, I said, how many applications did you have and you reviewed for one position? 300.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, you have to be marketed different. You have to be able to stand out amongst others, and there are things out there to do. It's not the government's job, but there are things with LinkedIn and other partners that can come alongside to help you do that. You just have to stand out and accept, like the mayor said, a little less than what you did or what you had before.
We are talking about Indiana's economy and the jobs picture here in the state. We're fortunate to have as our guests Wayne Siebold, Mark Everson, Lynn Albin, and Tim Rissmiller. Please stay with us. I'm John Kroll. Welcome back to No Limits and our first anniversary show. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's economy and jobs. 1 year later, it was the subject of our first show. We have as our guests Marion Mayor Wayne Siebold, Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner Mark Everson, and Lynn Albin and Tim Rissmiller of the Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood, which runs a program for unemployed members of the congregation. We were talking right before the break about how we've entered. Mayor Siebold was suggesting we may be entering into a period where there's just going to be employment volatility, that you can't count on necessarily having a job. Are we preparing people also then for the cycle? I mean, wondering whether you've got a job from week to week, even if you're doing good work, would seem to me to be pretty stressful. Mark Everson.
Yeah, I do think things are fundamentally different in the way businesses operate from certainly when I was first starting in my career. And I want to, again, reinforce what the mayor just said about the need to take a position that may not be ideal. One ramification of the extended benefits, which is to say beyond the state unemployment benefits, which run half a year, their federal benefits now go up to almost 2 years in Indiana. It's an absolute fact that people take a decision. They look at what they can draw in unemployment up to 390, and if their spouse is working and has health benefits, and then particularly if they can avoid child care costs if they have children, they look at that and then they compare that number, which the value of all that may be with the child care, $400, $500, $600 a week. They make a very legitimate short-term decision not to take a job that they could get. And that makes total sense, but only in the short term, because after 15 or 18 months, people don't want them, as has been stated repeatedly. So this policy, while it's helping, and I don't want to, it's a tough policy because there are tens of thousands of people who would take that job, who are getting that benefit. But the conundrum here is this policy has had a bad impact in terms of the what it's done to many people who then get into that situation, just as Wayne was saying earlier about the perception and the attitudes towards them is because of being out for so long. I know that's a little tough medicine, but it's true.
Well, and then how should we refine that policy then if that gets in the way? I mean, do you say to people, we'll give you part of the benefit if you take a job that comes in below that? I mean,
I think the policy needs to be looked at. It runs out at the end of the year, and it's a congressional action in Washington. But this ramification needs to be looked at because the Federal Reserve banks, they've done some studies, and they think it accounts for maybe 0.4% in the overall unemployment rate. And what we really need to do is get liquidity back into the workforce right now and get people hired faster, and then that'll build the confidence and the demand.
Yeah, Tim Rissmiller, did you have a thought on that? Or
I absolutely agree. It's totally agree to that.
That we need to figure. Well, and I guess part of it though is it shows how complicated a problem this is. That the fact, I mean, in that situation, if you do have child care concerns and you do have all of those, and frankly, if your margin wasn't that great, even when both spouses were employed, and you're looking at, okay, we're going to take another major hit so I can go back to work in the hopes that somehow this might lead to something else 2 years from now, and in the meantime, I'm not sure how I'm going to feed my kids or even where I'm going to place them during the day. to some degree, my guess is, Lynn, you have those kinds of conversations fairly frequently with people. What do you tell them?
A lot. We have people that have said in group that, you know, they can't consciously take a job that is $13 an hour or less because they can't possibly make it on that when having to pay child care. And we've also had people who, on the other hand, have been through a job selection process where they've, from their immediate application to the time where they get hired, they've taken 6 months, and they've gone through interviews, and they've gone through questionnaires, and they've gone through culture tests, and they've gone through so many things just to get there, and it's not the money that he wanted to make, but he jumped those hoops and he did it. So I think there's a lot of disparity between the mental attitudes of a lot of people. There's some people who want what they want, and that's what they want. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people who are like, well, I got to make ends meet. I got to pay my bills somehow. And even something is better than nothing. So it has a lot to do with the mental training that you were talking about. You know, you have people who are willing to do what it takes, and then you have people who are just like, well, you know, I can be in unemployment, so why bother?
Are there ways, perhaps, that we could incentivize the unemployment process more than we do?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong.
Go ahead, Tim.
Can't you make a certain amount of money, and then the difference is still compensatable through unemployment benefits?
Mark Everson would be the person to ask.
Yeah, you can. There's a formula that allows you to offset some of the earnings, and you get to a point where you're making more than the benefit. You can't do that, and that's for working part time, and that works. And I think that what you're raising is the state went through a major change in the unemployment insurance law this year to get the fund back in balance. It's a little technical, but we owe almost $2 billion to the federal government. The legislature dealt with that issue. It increased premiums, made some adjustments on the benefit side. So the system's better, but we could look at some policy changes that have been suggested to incentivize work, part-time work, or taking jobs at a lower level. I'm not sure whether that'll get dealt with or not. But the fundamental issue here is, again, the one everybody keeps coming back to. It's the individual's attitude towards those issues of how much they need to earn.
We've gotten a question from a listener. It says, query for your guest and for you too. So I guess it means that I don't get off the hot seat on this one either. And this comes from Rob Schachter. I hope I pronounced that right. Invest in and you get a return out. Question, would you personally be willing to pay more taxes if you knew the money would be earmarked for public infrastructure job creation? My answer is yes. What's yours? I'll start over there with Lynn.
Sure.
You would? How about you, Tim?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Mark Everson?
On a personal basis, I would say the problem is the spending, first and foremost. So I would not have answered the question the way all the Republicans did last week. If you had a 10-to-1 deal, I would take that. So that's not to say I wouldn't pay a little bit more, but most of this big, huge problem we have has to be dealt with on the spend side. So you got to get that piece first.
Mayor Siebel.
I think once we get our house in order, if you still need to then increase the tax, that's fine. But, the fundamental question that nobody really seems to want to deal with is that the way we fund government today isn't working. And at some point, we're going to have to decide what essential services are. And that's going to be a huge debate. We thought we were very smart in Marion, and we called a committee together, and 50 people showed up, and we had all the services the city provides, and we thought we'll take everyone will put a check mark next to what they thought was essential, and then there'll be some that won't have a check mark. We'll get rid of them. And every category had a check mark, somebody wants transportation more than they need parks, and somebody else wants parks more than they need. So, but going back to job thing real quick,
there's
a gentleman in California who I met that was making over six figures a year, and he says, I work behind a cubicle, and I got downsized. And he goes, and I went through this period of kind of depression, and what am I going to do? And I looked around, and he says, and I found this great opportunity after I got my head together. And he goes, I have three part-time jobs that are totally different. He goes, I'm loving life. He goes, I'm not making quite as much as I did, but not too far off. Mm-hmm. And he goes, now, I can do that because my wife has a job that has benefits. But he said, I don't know that I'll go back to a company and just work for one company ever again. He goes, I love the fact that one day I'm outside and the next day I'm doing this. And so he's taken a whole different approach.
Yeah. Everson, you had a comment you wanted to make.
I was just going to say, it's not only about spending and then how many extra revenues you potentially bring in. I'm a big advocate of reforming the tax code, even if you do it in a hopefully a revenue-neutral basis. And you can simplify it and then still provide certain incentives for principally small businesses. What needs to be done is help the small guys. The small guys have created jobs over the last decade. If you look at employers with more than 500 employees, they have actually shed jobs. And as people have said, a lot of that's going overseas. The place to get the help is in the smaller businesses. And this state, through the governor's leadership and others, we kept the taxes down and done the right things that, so that the mayor can have conversations with dozens of employers. That's working, but we need to change that tax code.
And what ways would you propose that we change it?
Well,
I'm drawing. I should should say that you've got a background in this too, having worked for the IRS.
Yes.
So
look, you need to simplify it, and you can bring down the rates for the businesses. And let's remember, there's a lot of conversation right now about corporate tax reform and lowering rates, but most business activity takes place through flow-through entities and individuals that aren't incorporated. So the real thing you need to do is help the individuals.
Travis, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. We've got just a couple of minutes, so if you can make it quick. Thanks.
I've heard several things said that it's short-sighted on the point of potential employees, but what would the panel have to comment on the state's short-term view of union busting in the form of trying to make union construction jobs appear as seasonal labor, which it, in my opinion, is not?
Good question. Thank you for calling. All right. Well, what I guess probably I'll start with our quasi-public officials here anyway, our public officials. Mayor Siebold.
Well, I don't know exactly what the state's policy is on that, and if, everybody has different perceptions, but, I mean, the way we do things in Mary, we don't care whether it's a union job or a non-union job. We treat them all the same, and, some companies work well in a union situation, some don't, I think it's all in what your preference is as an individual, what you want to do, and the preference of the company, but...
Mark Everson.
I don't agree with the premise of the question, but I would say this. In construction in particular, it's interesting what the Assembly did do in the unemployment insurance reform that it enacted is it used to be the case that if you worked for Target all year long, earned $500 a week, that would be $26,000 for the year, and then you got laid off, you were going to get a benefit of $280. If you were a construction worker and made the same $26,000 but only worked 8 or 9 months, then your benefit was $367 because the formula looked back to your high quarter. What they did was annualize all this so that you look back and you come up with an average and that's applied so you're treated equally. That doesn't get to the fact that the construction worker still may be drawing benefits during that 3 or 4 months that he or she is not working.
I want to talk real quickly and bring it back to you, Tim, because I think you're the one who's facing this, all of this stuff right now. If we were going to come out of this and say we were going to do this programming again a year from now, what are the most concrete steps we could take here in Indianapolis or in Indiana to help people like you? What would help you the most?
Well, in one word or less, it's still the jobs. However they're created, however the enthusiasm for the I really believe it starts with the small guys first and works up, and that's a wonderful thing that the state of Indiana has. I agree with the speakers before, but somehow or another, we just need to get around that corner. stay in the middle of the road, not too much revenue, be positive. We can't ask the government to do it all, but somehow or another, we're just going to have to create the jobs. And not to have any gloom here, but we got a couple hundred thousand men and women coming home, our military, that we're going to be needing to take care of. They deserve jobs for after what they have done for our country. We have the baby boomers just at the beginning of that age group coming. Somewhere along the line, Congress has to play nice. That's what we put them up there for, is to make these decisions and help us out. And it's altogether different job market. It's electronic. It's not manufacturing anymore. My parents used to go out and go to the factory and make their money, and that's where they retired from. That's not the case anymore, nor do we live in that same house for 35 years with a white picket fence in front of it. Somehow or another, we got to shake the people to get the economy started, and we need that leadership. We need that leadership everywhere.
I think you get the last word on this subject, Tim, and that's probably appropriate. I would like to thank my guests for joining us today, Marion Mayer, Wayne Siebold. It was good seeing you again.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Mark Everson, I guess every 2 weeks now we have to talk, right, of Indiana Workforce Development Commissioner, and Lynn Albin and Tim Rissmiller of the Mount Pleasant Christian Church in Greenwood. I'd like to thank you all for being here. I also would like to thank our listeners, not just for listening to us today, but for hanging with us for this entire past year. Hope we're together for many more days and many more Thursdays in the weeks ahead. I'm John Kroll. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Matthew Sosi. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.